Hello and welcome to Deliverability Defined. My name is Alyssa.
And I'm Melissa.
Thanks for listening. I need to figure out a better flow for that intro. My goodness, it changes every time. And I'm just like, what am I saying? Well, today we're going to talk all about email metrics, some benchmarks to look out for, why some metrics are not super reliable, and why others might be better to look at. So it should be a fun combo today.
Do we have anything exciting we can talk about beforehand?
Well, we're recording this on a Friday, which we normally don't. So what are your weekend plans?
Oh, that's a good question. I am going to a workout class in the morning, which I'm excited about. I really love my workout group. Mm-hmm. They are so fun and supportive and like just love being around all of them. And we just started doing Saturday morning. We haven't done one yet. This is our first Saturday morning class. So I'm excited to do that. And then there's this bagel shop in Tacoma that is pretty popular, that there's always a line out the door. So after I work out, my friend and I are going to get bagels. So I'm excited.
Nice. Oh, that sounds amazing.
It's the little things.
What kind of workout is it?
It's like every class does something a little different. This one's like a overall like body pump type.
Oh, fun.
Cardio, weightlifting. Yeah, I don't know. It's just a fun class. We laugh a lot. You know, it's great.
I love that. That's so fun.
Yeah.
That reminds me of an embarrassing story I can tell.
Yes, let's do that.
I know we're always looking for fun, embarrassing stories.
Yes.
I mean, it just kind of, I don't know, it's just embarrassing, but
I have no idea which direction this is going in.
It's not that bad, but it just kind of shows my character. And I don't know, it's not great. But like not long ago, just a couple weeks ago, Thomas and I are just like chilling on the couch and I see a Facebook Marketplace thing pop up. And it's a Pilates reformer that looks really nice for $300, which is like
a steal.
Really cheap. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love Pilates, but I've obviously only gone in like a studio. I've never done that at home, but I always thought, well, you know, I could watch YouTube videos and do it on my own time. I work from home. I could like do a lunch break Pilates session. It sounded amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I convinced Thomas. I'm like, we got to hop on this. Like I'm messaging her now. Like we got to go pick it up. He has a pickup truck. I was like, let's make it happen. We put James to bed. We like have to drive in his pickup truck all across town to get to this lady's house. And
oh, no.
We get there and it was just kind of like a very sad state. Like, I think she was moving so many animals of all sorts of types. And like,
oh, no.
She had multiple Pilates machines. I don't really understand why. We were buying one of like three. It was clear animals had been on the Pilates machine. They are also, it was huge, like won't even fit in the truck bed.
Oh, no.
And very, very heavy and upstairs.
Oh, no.
And I don't know if I've said on the podcast, like I'm pregnant. Thomas has to do this by himself. But we get there and I feel so bad for her that I'm like, I can't turn back now. Like we got to do this because
she's getting the $300 whether you take the machine or not.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I should have been like, I'll pay you, but I'm not taking this thing. But I was like, we're here. I feel like she was in a tough spot.
Mm.
So Thomas freaking gets that thing down the stairs. It's literally so heavy.
Oh gosh.
I'm like trying to help however I can. And we get it out in this truck. It's hanging out of the truck bed. Luckily, it was fine. Gets home. It's currently in our room because there's literally nowhere else to put it. And it's okay, but like, it's not great. And
oh,
it's
no.
Ginormous. I've used it one time. Didn't love it.
It's not
the same thing as being in studio. And now I'm like ready to sell it. And I've had it for, I think, 2 weeks. And Thomas was like, I knew this was going to happen, which is the worst part. He was like, I knew it. And I was like, okay. So that's my version of working out, just buying stuff on Facebook Marketplace and selling it. So.
Oh, shoot.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I have been in that situation, though, where like I get somewhere and I can't turn back.
I wish I would have. I really do. But I've seen this exact reformer on Facebook Marketplace for way more money.
Yeah.
So I think I can actually make a profit. I need to clean it up a lot more. But that's my goal, is that I'll feel better about this whole situation by making like $100. We'll see.
And then you can take Thomas out to a nice lunch.
Yes, definitely.
That's hilarious.
Oh my gosh. Well, fun.
Yeah.
We can hop into it then. Talk about metrics, benchmarks, good stuff.
Yeah. So we can just talk about, I think the first metric that comes to mind when we talk about deliverability that people typically gravitate towards wanting to talk about is open rates. It seems to be kind of a polarizing topic as far as metrics go when it comes to deliverability. And there's a lot of reasons for that. So we can just kind of dive into like at ConvertKit, what like the average open rate is across all active accounts. So I report on this every month. If you're interested, there is a deliverability report that I publish that you can find at convertkit.com/blog, and it should be listed there with all the other blog posts. And typically our open rate across our average open rate across all active accounts is about 42%. It goes anywhere from like 42 to 44 and kind of stays in that range. So that's a pretty good open rate. We usually consider that to be like higher end-ish average. If your open rate's higher than that, that's wonderful. If your open rate is much, much lower than that, it's possible that there might be something going on. Open rates are, generally speaking, a good metric to look at when it comes to deciding if you have any issues with deliverability on your list. So I like to say if you have an average and it's kind of sticks there and it's on the higher end, that's great. If you notice it drop really quickly, there could be an issue. And if you have lower open rates that are consistent, there also could be some issues. So that's just generally speaking, like how I like to view open rates.
Yeah, I agree. I'm definitely looking for any like major drops being an indicator that there's a problem. If you are a ConvertKit Pro plan user, one of my favorite things to do is to go into the deliverability tab of your account, and you can actually filter by mailbox provider, which has been really helpful. If I do notice that someone has a drop in open rates, I can actually look and see, okay, where did this drop occur? And if it's like, oh, the drop only happens at Gmail, but if I filter by Microsoft or Yahoo, there is no drop, that makes it really clear. Hey, there was an inboxing issue at Gmail specifically. Let's go look there. And then sometimes it'll be like, oh, the drop actually happened across all mailbox providers, which can be a much different story. Like the message just didn't resonate with people the way it was supposed to, or maybe the message got clipped or who knows, but it's kind of just, it makes it easier to investigate what could have gone wrong.
Yeah. It's one of those benchmarks that's, it's kind of like what you see, at least in ConvertKit, when you are looking at your subscriber page, like that open rate, the average open rate is kind of right there. And then when you're looking at like individual broadcasts or sequences, you know, you can see those open rates. And so it's an easy benchmark to be like, oh, something is, doesn't seem right here. Something seems like it changed. And you mentioned like, you know, having your message clipped can affect your open rate. Having your authentication, something wrong with your authentication can affect your open rate. So there's lots of different sort of like easy fixes when it comes to like a really significant drop in opens. And then sometimes there's more difficult things to address, like a domain reputation issue at a specific mailbox provider or something like that. So it's a very like nuanced metric because there are so many different directions that you can go in to start digging in and investigating why you're seeing a drop in open rates, which sometimes can be really overwhelming as a sender because it's very easy to go down the wrong path sometimes or to panic when you see changes in open rates, which is understandable. But kind of like the first thing, if I were to give any advice to someone who is experiencing a drop in open rates, is to not panic and just start slowly digging into different aspects of why your open rates might be changing.
Yeah. One thing I always like to include in these podcasts about open rates, you know, we talk about how they're not super reliable in the fact that, you know, if it says 54% of people opened your message, it's not, you know, 54% of people didn't actually open your message because of all sorts of things like Apple's mail privacy protection. Why did I like, I should know that. Whenever we record, sometimes my brain is like,
it's been a while since we've talked about it.
Yeah. But things like that. So what that does is whenever messages land in the inbox for Apple Mail users, Apple automatically loads the open tracking pixel for those users, even if they haven't opened the message, which is why everyone's open rates have become really inflated since then. But key word there is inbox. At least so far in testing everyone has done in the industry, it looks like Apple only loads the open tracking pixel for messages that do land in the inbox. So that's at least a good sign if you are seeing those inflated open rates. It's telling you messages are going to the inbox versus if you see pretty low open rates, it might tell you that your messages are landing in the spam folder for a lot of those people.
Right. Good point.
Alrighty. Another good metric is, see, bounce rate. That's a good one. It's not one that I feel like we use as often as we use open rates, but it's still helpful to keep an eye on. And do you want to call out that there is a new ConvertKit feature in your broadcast analytics?
Sure.
Where you can see your bounce rate.
Super exciting. Very helpful. This is something that we're like really excited about. So if you go to a specific broadcast and you click on the title of the broadcast you've sent and you look at analytics, you can actually see more information now about your bounce rate and like how many subscribers have bounced from a specific broadcast, where in the past you usually had to go to like your subscriber page and see just like a drop down menu of bounce subscribers. So this is just an easier way to see like per broadcast what your bounce rate is, which can be helpful if there's a potential issue.
Yes, definitely. We definitely use bounce and delivery rates on our end to monitor ConvertKit's delivery health, to find any senders who might be having issues. So that's great. And then on the individual level, I would just keep a close eye on your bounce rate. Make sure it stays below 2%. I would say most people are even below 1%, which is great. And those bounces should just be your run-of-the-mill, like this email address is invalid and there's just a few of those, or this person's mailbox is full, which unfortunately you can't see all of those details in ConvertKit. But if it's below 2%, that's probably the type of bounce you're seeing. If you start to see bounces above 2%, especially above 5%, that's usually a pretty good sign that something else is going on that needs some further investigating. So if you see that when you're looking at your broadcast, feel free to reach out to us. You can go to help@convertkit.com and tell them like, hey, connect me with the deliverability team to get a hold of us. We'd be happy to take a look and see why people are bouncing.
I don't want to go too much into like, there's so many, I mean, I could have talked about open rates for even longer, but there's so many like rabbit holes we could go down. Just an example of like a larger bounce event that possibly you could see has to do with domain reputation. So with a lot of Yahoogle changes, if you haven't listened to that episode yet and you don't know about Yahoogle changes, please go listen to that episode. Probably most of you know about these recent Gmail and Yahoo changes requirements that have come out. But we've just been seeing as senders have to make some of these adjustments to the new requirements, sometimes we'll see an increase in bounces related to domain reputation at Gmail. So that's an example of like a larger bounce event that might not have to do with like a full mailbox or just like individual subscriber instances. This is typically like a larger thing that happens that has to do with the health of your domain. So that's just an example of like a larger bounce event that might need some further investigation.
Another thing to mention about bounces is if you have not complied with the Yahoogle requirements, you might start to see more bouncing happen, particularly in April. It could be spam filtering as well, but that'll just be another time that it's really important to keep an eye on your bounce rate and make sure that you are authenticating your messages properly, you have DMARC in place, and you're staying below Gmail's spam threshold, which we will get into when we talk about complaint rates.
Yeah. So that's kind of a good segue into another metric that is super important to pay attention to, especially as we move into this like post Yahoogle era. And complaints are, they've always been important. They've always been something that's like a negative signal to mailbox providers that something is not necessarily right with like something a sender might be doing. So there's a lot of reasons a person might get a complaint, whether that's list bombing or poor list collection methods, or, you know, Alyssa, if you think of other things to add to that, there's so many reasons why you might have elevated complaint rates. You want to typically see a complaint rate stay at or below 0.1%. I mean, ideally you would have no complaints, but 0.1% is sort of like the industry standard of like not seeing bad things start to happen to your emails. And if you've listened again to our Yahoogle podcast episode, we talk a lot about Google Postmaster tools, which is super helpful. And again, Gmail, a tool Gmail has that you can monitor your spam complaint rate, like you just mentioned, Alyssa. So I've been helping a lot of customers get that set up lately and explaining how that can be useful to people. So that's a metric that I think if we were going to talk about like listing out the importance of metrics, while open rates are always generally talked about as like the king of metrics, I feel like complaint rates are super important and actually have more of a significant impact directly to like your domain reputation. And so if you like need something to be more hyper focused on other than open rates, I would recommend paying more attention to your spam complaints.
Yes. I think complaint rates are my favorite metric in all of email. They are very insightful. One thing to note is that the complaint rate you see in your email provider like ConvertKit probably won't be as helpful as the complaint rate you can see in Google Postmaster tools.
That's a good call out.
Yeah. So we do now, again, there's a new feature in ConvertKit. You can see in the broadcast analytics what your complaint rates are, which is really helpful. You can see how many people complained. But the thing is, since Gmail subscribers don't contribute to that complaint data, Gmail doesn't send that data back like other mailbox providers do. Those people sort of inflate or deflate that metric a bit. They skew it because you have a bunch of Gmail people who are not, their complaints are not being counted. And so it's going to make it look like your complaint rate is lower than it really is.
Right.
So that's why the Gmail, Google Postmaster tools, spam complaint rate section is so helpful. Mm-hmm. You get a much more accurate complaint rate there. You can see how it trends over time. And this has been the biggest indicator when helping customers, especially since February's Yahoo goal changes. The biggest indicator someone is going to have deliverability issues is keeping track of those spam complaint rates. And if they spike, to take really quick action to dig in to some complainers and see what's going on.
Yeah, we're seeing even more so now that we've been working with customers who have set up Google Postmaster tools. It's very clear that there is a general pattern of high complaints associated with a drop in domain reputation. And there's varying levels to this. You know, if you're sending a lot of mail, those complaints may or may not affect you as heavily, as quickly as someone who's maybe not sending as much mail and having really high complaints. So a little bit of this is kind of variable, but generally speaking, I would say if you're seeing a consistent increase in spam complaints, especially like above 0.3%, you're going to see a very like quick and significant drop in your overall domain reputation. And there are things that often are out of sender's control that they don't even realize is causing those complaints. It's not always like you're being spammy or you're sending bad content or you have bad list collection methods. That's not always the case. Sometimes there are other reasons for an elevated spam complaint rate that you may not even be aware of until you dig in.
Yep, totally agree. How do you feel about jumping into click rates? Do you have anything else related to complaint rates you want to talk about?
I don't think so. That's pretty much it. So yeah, jump into click rate.
Yeah. I wanted to mention it because I think it's an interesting one that you and I get sometimes where someone will say, my open rate is great. Nothing has changed, but my click rate is different. And there's a lot of nuance here. Sometimes it can be deliverability related. A lot of times it's not. So I wanted to mention a couple factors. One being bot clicks, which is a thing, unfortunately. And then another thing that I'll get into in a second being content, I think is really important here, strategy. Mm-hmm. So with bot clicks, sometimes I'll see someone say, my click rates have dropped dramatically. Open rates are fine, but click rates have dropped. And when I go look, I can tell that in previous emails, they had a whole lot of bot clicks. Mm. And in this latest one, they didn't. So it's actually a more accurate representation of their clicks. Mm-hmm. So if you're wondering, why are there bot clicks? What does that mean? For a lot of people, they have spam filters that are going through and checking the links in the email and clicking them to make sure they're safe. And then once they determine they're safe, they deliver the message to the inbox. So especially if you have a lot of like B2B addresses, we see this with our customers who have a lot of teachers on their list or financial people on their list or .gov domains on their list.
Yeah.
Anything like that is probably going to see a lot of bot clicks because those are email addresses that have to be super, super, super secure. And they don't really, you know, their IT teams don't care about your click rate. They care that teachers and other people aren't getting phishing emails. So they're going to have those strict security settings in place. And that's why you might see open rates fluctuate from bot clicks. One way to diagnose that, I would say, we tell people that you can put in like a hidden link into your email where you link to like a period and a sentence and you don't have it highlighted or change colors or anything, and then see who clicks that period in the email. And that'll kind of tell you who has bot clicks going on. And then another thing I think you and I both see often is sometimes there's something about the content where people aren't clicking, and it doesn't have anything to do with deliverability, but it's more so like there are way too many calls to actions in the email, or maybe there were no calls to actions in the emails and nobody clicked. But we've seen little changes like that make huge impacts on clicks.
Yeah. Maybe your call to action is buried in the email and you're not surfacing it quickly enough at the top of the email for people to get far enough to be able to do anything with that call to action. So yeah, there's a lot of strategy related topics or advice that kind of cross over. It's not necessarily deliverability, but they make a big impact when you're looking at all of these metrics together.
Yep, definitely. Can you think of any other metrics that you have been tracking these days?
I know this is like, this isn't really, I guess, like a metric that in the like traditional sense of what we're talking about, but I did list cold subscribers.
Oh yeah, that's a good
on
one.
This list. I think this is one that kind of is interesting too when we talk about what, like, open rates not necessarily being the most accurate. So I get this question a lot. If open rates are not always super accurate, then how can I trust that my cold subscriber list is cold, and how do I re-engage that group or decide who to let go? And so I kind of like to talk about this a little bit. And in general, I would say you should always be thinking about some kind of timeline to clean your list, regardless of, you know, we could get into all of the nuances of like open rates and accuracy and all of that. And at the end of the day, I think it's really important to think like, okay, I generally speaking get this many subscribers per month. You know, we have a lot of customers right now using recommendation tools, which is amazing, and they're getting tons and tons of subscribers, but we really want to like help people keep super engaged lists that will help with their domain reputation overall. And in order to do that, it would be, you know, a good idea to say, okay, I get this many subscribers per month through this recommendation tool, so I want to make sure that anyone on my list who hasn't opened an email in 30 days maybe is removed from my list. And this could also look different for someone who's not using a recommendation tool. And maybe you say, I'm going to at least like run my list through a re-engagement series every 6 months or something like that. So cold subscribers can have a really significant impact on your domain reputation. And again, through this like Yahoo Google new change era, I think best practices are going to be even more important for everyone just based on what we're seeing already. And so thinking about cold subscribers and how they may or may not impact your deliverability is super important.
It's such a good one. It's such a like heated one where some people are like,
it is,
never clean your list, it doesn't matter. And then some people are like, oh, I clean my list every 30 days.
Yeah.
I think we can have nuance. It can be an it depends situation. But for the most part, we have seen the more engaged your list is, the better your deliverability is. And those re-engagement campaigns are great for making sure that you are giving people a chance to get re-engaged. If they have their open tracking pixel turned off, for example, they can still click a button to confirm they want to be on the list instead of just removing them outright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe if you're seeing, like, for example, we talked about recommendations, creator network.
Yeah.
There might be certain sources of signups where you want to be more picky about list cleaning. And then there might be others where you're like, oh, these people all purchase something from me.
Right.
I'm going to be way less picky with them. I'm never going to clean them out or something like that.
Right.
So you can sort of build your own nuance into your own system based on the way you collect subscribers.
Yeah, that's so true. I think I put this at the beginning of the notes that we've been looking at for this episode, and I kind of forgot to bring it up. But I feel like a good way to look at deliverability is just like everyone has their own like puzzle, and all of these pieces of the puzzle make a picture. And it might be the same general picture for everyone, but there's going to be differences. So like if your, you know, picture, if the picture is a waterfall in a pond, you might have, this is such a like cheesy way to describe it, but I think it makes sense to me. Like you might have like ducks in your pond and I might have koi fish. I don't know, but it's just different because your business and my business might not function the same. So even though the basic deliverability recommendations are the same, how you go about doing them depends on your business and how the goals are of your business, how often you send emails. Like there's so many factors. And that's why we always joke around that like our answers a lot of time response for people when they ask a general deliverability question is, oh, I don't know, it depends. But it's because there's so many more questions that I would ask in order to like get down to a root issue or a recommendation. And it's because my job is looking at each of those pieces of the puzzle, putting them together and figuring out how your picture might be different than someone else's and giving you like curated advice to help your particular situation.
Yeah, I totally agree. Really any blanket deliverability information is kind of hard. Like take all of it with a grain of salt or at least a lens on your own setup and tweak things in a way that makes sense for you. So hopefully this episode was helpful with that. You know, we're talking about benchmarks and what's industry standard. But I think one key here is get really familiar with your metrics. What's normal for you? What's a normal open rate for you? What's a normal click rate for you? And spot anything that is, I had like such a good word for it and I couldn't think of it, but just spot anytime those change.
Abnormalities. Right. Yeah.
Abnormality. There we go.
That's what I was. Yeah. There you go. It's Friday. Remember, we're recording this.
Our two remaining brain cells are like really trying. Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully this is helpful. I feel like metrics are an interesting topic because there's always going to be people who have different opinions on like what makes something reliable or not. But at the end of the day, again, it's taking all of these pieces and figuring out like what your picture looks like. And if you ever need any help digging into a particular metric and you're confused by it or you're unsure if it's healthy, you know, we're happy to look at your account in ConvertKit and figure out some recommendations to give you.
Perfect. Thank you all so much for listening. Hope you have a great rest of your week, and we will see you next week.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Deliverability Defined.
Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast wherever you're listening. And if you have time, please leave us a review.
You can find a resource guide for today's show at convertkit.com/deliverability, where we outline all of the information you need to know from today's episode.
If you have a question or topic you want us to cover, let us know within the ConvertKit community or at convertkit.com/deliverability.
We'll see you next week.